Today on Vox Talks Economics, what is the impact of reducing the stigma of depression? Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics. So remember to subscribe, follow us on Instagram as well. We are increasingly aware of the number of people who suffer from mental illness and its impact on their lives. And one of the persistent challenges in encouraging sufferers to seek help is the perception that if you suffer from depression, for example, people assume that you're somehow weak or lazy. So, at the moment, many public health campaigns are trying to increase the number of people who seek help by targeting that stigma. Egon Tripodi of the Hertie School of Governance is one of the authors of a new paper that demonstrates that the impacts of these campaigns might not be exactly what many policymakers expect or hope for. He joins me now. Egon, welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Hello, team. Thanks for having me.
Egon, I said we're increasingly aware of mental illness. How widespread is it?
I should start by saying that there are different forms of mental illness. Mm-hmm. And our study is concentrating on one, which is depression. Now, depression is not as easily measurable as other conditions. The most comparable data set is the global burden of disease, which estimates that in most countries, between 3 and 5% of the population experience persistent symptoms of depression. But depression can also be a condition with fluctuating symptoms. Mm-hmm. So I will look at this estimate as a lower bound of the actual prevalence.
If I am depressed, then how is my perception that there is a stigma about this? How does this make my illness worse?
It can make your illness worse in potentially several ways. It can affect how willing people are to engage in social interactions, both at work and in the private sphere. It can worsen how people view themselves if they internalize the stigma that there is. And it can affect willingness to seek treatment.
And we have evidence, do we, that there is a link between this stigma and people who are depressed not seeking help?
Yes, there is a very large literature from psychology in particular that has been for several decades doing tremendously important work on the conceptualization of stigma around depression and on how stigma perceptions relate to the demand for therapy among the people who might need it. Now, this literature mostly finds a negative correlation. That is, people who perceive a high prevalence of stigma are less likely to seek therapy.
In 2023, we spoke to Dean Carlin about the impact of depression and low self-esteem in low-income countries. Listen to the episode, Improving Mental Health as a Route Out of Poverty, from August 2023.
In this research, you've been investigating this link between reducing perception of stigma and the possibility that that might lead to an increased take-up of therapy, the sort of reverse of that negative correlation you were talking about. Now, to do this, you needed to find a sample. Where did you find this? How did you know that the people who were involved in your research were depressed?
So we recruited participants on an online platform called Prolific that is often used for academic studies. In our recruitment materials, we don't say that the study is on mental health to avoid biasing data collection. Once they are in the study, participants are asked to answer what is called the patient health questionnaire, which is commonly used as a diagnostic tool that measures the incidence of depressive symptoms in the last 2 weeks. And based on the answers to this survey, we keep in the study only people that display depression symptoms.
This is, however, a vulnerable group. What ethical safeguards did you take to make sure that you did no harm?
Yes, this is a vulnerable group. And precisely for this reason, we ran several pilots just to understand and measure the stigma misperception gap. And we had conversations with our ethics board based on this data, and we felt comfortable about giving what turned out to be overwhelmingly good news to participants about the prevalence of stigma. I should also say that the diagnosis of depression is usually complemented by an examination of a clinician that verifies the respondent's understanding of the diagnostic questionnaire. In our study, because we don't have this step, we decided to not give participants any explicit feedback that could be interpreted as our research team issuing a diagnosis. So we were very careful with that.
Okay, so you have a control group and a treatment group in your sample. Now, what information did you gather from the control group?
So we explained to everyone in our study, including the control group, that we're offering a voucher for 4 weeks of therapy with a very popular online therapy service. And we explained that we're interested in understanding how much they would be willing to pay for this service. We don't mention in the control group anything about depression stigma.
And for the treatment group, what different treatment did they get?
So before we ask for their willingness to pay for the 4 weeks of therapy, we tell participants in the treatment group that we recently surveyed a representative sample of the US population on whether they agree with the statement that depressed people are lazy, hard to be around, and have a weak character. And that we're interested now in what they think is the percentage of Americans that agreed with such statement in our representative survey. Depressed participants overestimate the prevalence of stigma. The average belief in our study is that 38% of Americans would agree with that stigmatizing statement I gave you earlier. Mm-hmm. But we show to participants that the true percentage is only 16% in the treatment group.
So you're giving your treatment group, I mean, it's basically good news. Stigma is less than they think that it is on average. We would expect from this prior work that you were talking about, you'd expect from basic economic theory that would increase their willingness to pay for therapy. So is that what you found?
That is indeed what we expected, but it's not exactly what we found.
Oh.
If stigma were a barrier to seeking help, then yes, we had a strong theoretical reason to expect that informing people about the actual prevalence of depression stigma would increase demand for therapy. Instead, what we find is that people are less interested in seeking professional help when they find out how prevalent stigma is.
Egon, this is completely counterintuitive. How on earth do you interpret a result like this?
Yeah, so we did quite a bit of work on trying to understand where this could be coming from. One way to interpret our results is that high stigma is not just a barrier to seeking help, but that it also motivates people to treat their own depression. According to this view, high stigma implies a high social cost of experiencing symptoms of depression. With our study, we can show a few of the ways in which correcting stigma perceptions can lower the cost of experiencing depression. We show that people exposed to the good news gain self-esteem and become more confident in their ability to handle depression. They become less likely to view themselves as lazy, hard to be around, and have a weak character, which are the traits that were characterizing the stigmatizing statement. And they report being more hopeful about their future and more open about discussing their struggles with their family and friends.
Anyone who's suffered from depression or has been close to someone who suffers from depression knows that one aspect of this depressive state is that you often don't really perceive very accurately what's good for you, or you have an inconsistent view of that. Can a study that's based on a willingness to pay provide robust data in this context?
I agree. In principle, we should be worried that willingness to pay might capture a bundle of pessimistic and possibly inconsistent considerations that are hard to tease out here. In fact, we were quite concerned that willingness to pay might have little to say about whether people indeed are more or less likely to seek therapy. So we ran another study in collaboration with an online group therapy service, through which we had the unique opportunity to link our data on willingness to pay with actual therapy take-up. And in this study, we find that, reassuringly, willingness to pay is positively and significantly correlated with actual take-up.
Now, to follow up on these results that you have, you did some more research, didn't you, with another group? What was the treatment for this group? Why did you go further?
Yeah, so we also have an experiment in which we correct stigma misperceptions in exactly the same way as in the main study. And instead of willingness to pay, what we measure are the intentions and emotional responses that participants have following the treatment.
Mm-hmm. And what did that tell you that you didn't know already?
So this is part of what I told you earlier. We learned that people are more optimistic about their ability to handle their own depression by themselves, as well as with the support of their social circle. So we view this as a mechanism through which we can explain why people are less likely to seek professional help as a result of our treatment.
Egon, as you said, the literature on the stigma of depression goes back quite some way. And there have been recent changes in the way that we think about mental illness and depression. There's an increased awareness. There is a quite rapid growth of online treatments, like the one that is a suggestion in this study, group treatments as well, so people are more open about suffering. Could this explain some of the difference between the results that you're getting and the previous work?
The increased awareness may have reduced the fear of serious backlash if others find out about your own depression. And the rapid growth of online services, I think, is very welcome as it caters to various needs such as affordability, privacy, and convenience.
Egon, it's very interesting the work that you've done and the way in which you can explain why we get these what seem like counterintuitive results at first. But it still remains that you're getting the opposite result to what most people would expect and what the body of research that exists so far implies. Can you both be right?
So we think it's possible that culture is changing and that older studies are no longer reflecting what is happening right now in the US setting that we study. But also I should note that many of the studies that document a negative correlation between perceived stigma and therapy demand tend to focus on individuals that are at risk of depression. And these individuals experience weaker symptoms than participants in our study. Our study suggests that the severity of depression does matter, that the people who experience more severe depression symptoms are both the ones with the most pessimistic perceptions of stigma and the ones who reduce their therapy demand the most when they receive good news on the prevalence of stigma.
Because if we take a step back from this, then your treatment has created a situation in which there are depressed people who are less likely to seek therapy. Now, we can interpret that as a good thing or a bad thing. In what situations do you think that it is good? What situations might it be bad?
We need to be careful here, but yeah. I would say the following. If we cannot provide therapy to everyone who needs it, then a decrease of therapy demand through improved self-esteem and more reliance on our social connections can be a good thing. But I think we should not forget that these things alone are likely to be imperfect alternatives for professional help.
And this surely has implications for the campaigns that we see at the moment that are trying to reduce the stigma. What do you think those implications are?
These campaigns are often motivated by an attempt to get depressed people under professional treatment. Our study would suggest that we're clearly missing the mark on that. But our study also shows that these campaigns do reduce the sting of depression, at least in the short run. This paper leaves us with an empirical question of what is the best approach to get people out of depression traps and whether correcting misperceptions about stigma does that for people in the long run.
Egon, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim.
The paper is called Depression Stigma, and the authors are Christopher Roth, Peter Schwartmann, and Egon Tripodi. It is discussion paper 18919 at CEPR.
This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It will help your friends and colleagues to find us. Next week on Vox Talks, how important is the rise in inequality for the populist vote?